Okay, you can meditate while we talk.
Então vocês podem meditar enquanto nós falamos.
And as we listen to a new set of frogs tonight.
Estamos escutando um novo grupo de sapos hoje à noite.
Tonight I'd like to talk on two topics.
Hoje à noite eu gostaria de falar sobre dois tópicos.
Okay. First will be the factors that need, or the qualities that we need to develop before we can get on the path.
Os primeiros são as qualidades que temos de desenvolver antes de entrar no caminho.
And the second will be just a general overview of the entire path.
E o segundo seria mais ou menos uma revisão do caminho inteiro.
We're going to divide this into three sections.
E vamos dividir esses fatores em três seções.
Okay. Of the preliminary qualities that we have to develop before we get on the path, the first is actually a form of right view that the Buddha called mundane. It has to do with karma, issues of karma and rebirth. After all, he's teaching a path of practice or a path of action that will lead to the end of suffering. And so we have to make certain assumptions about the power of action, that it's real, that we do have choice, that things are not totally determined. We do have our choices. The results do come from our actions. It's not like we're just writing in water. And that the quality of the results will be determined by the quality of the intention that motivates the act. We also make some assumptions about the question of rebirth. The Buddha never said that he could prove rebirth, but he said that if you did accept rebirth as a working hypothesis, you will be more likely to act in ways that are skillful and that can actually help you with the path. When we talk about karma, one of the most important things to realize is that karma is complex. We said this afternoon. It's not simply the fact that one action will lead to a certain result. It's a combination of actions that will determine the tendencies of these actions as they lead to results. And in particular, your present actions, in other words, the choices you're making right now, have a huge impact on how you will experience the results of past actions. In fact, when the Buddha is explaining the factors that lead up to suffering, he says that your present actions actually come prior to the input of the senses, which are the results of your past actions. In other words, we don't simply just receive input from the senses. We're out there looking for things. We have intentions. There are reasons for why we're looking, why we're listening. Sometimes the intentions are skillful. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes we're actually out looking for trouble. We're looking for something to be greedy about, looking for something to get angry about. And then we will see things in line with those intentions. All too often when people talk about karma, they talk about negative karma coming in from the past. But when the Buddha talked about it, he focused it on the positive issues, that because we have freedom of choice, things like generosity do have meaning. When someone is generous, it's not because they had to, they were generous because they chose to. It's a virtue that should be developed. And because when people help us, they had the choice not to help us, and many times when they did give help, they had to make sacrifices, they're deserving of our gratitude. So it's because we have freedom of choice that qualities like generosity and gratitude actually have meaning. The most important thing to notice about karma is that there are skillful and unskillful actions. The Buddha gives a list. There are three kinds of unskillful physical behavior. In other words, killing, stealing, having illicit sex. Four kinds of unskillful speech, lying, speaking divisively to break friends apart, speaking harshly to hurt people's feelings, and engaging in idle chatter, in other words, speaking without having any real intention at all. And then there are three kinds of unskillful mental action, having greed beyond what is appropriate, ill will, and then having wrong view about action. Now he says all these forms of unskillful action come from three roots in the mind. There's passion, aversion, and delusion. our duties with regard to these actions are that we should try to abandon unskillful actions and develop skillful actions in their place. Now, to do this, we have to develop certain internal qualities and also certain external qualities that the Buddha said lie actually as a foundation for the path. The first is truthfulness. We're going to be learning by looking at our actions. And if you're not true in admitting mistakes to yourself, in other words, admitting that you had an unskillful intention, or that you acted in an unskillful way on that intention, or that the results were not good. If you're not true to yourself about this, there's no way you're going to learn from your mistakes. So the first quality that's needed is truthfulness. The second quality, and the Buddha said this is the root of all skillfulness, is heedfulness. In other words, realizing that your actions make a difference, that if you're sloppy or careless in your actions, you can create a lot of trouble for yourself and other people. So therefore, you have to be very careful in what you choose to do and say and think. A third quality that the Buddha said he looked for in a student was the ability to be observant. In other words, noticing things, particularly noticing what's going on in your mind, and noticing your actions, and noticing the results of your actions. Another internal quality that the Buddha recommended is the quality of Sangvega. Tansala read to you this afternoon a passage on Sangvega. It's essentially a sense of dismay, and when you look at the way life is normally lived, it seems to be so pointless and so fruitless, and you want a way out. This is your motivating factor for getting on the path. As the Buddha says, the Eightfold Path is a way out of the meaninglessness and the pointlessness of so much of the suffering that goes on. A final internal quality that the Buddha talked about was in appropriate attention. In other words, you look at things in terms of what's skillful and not skillful, and you do your best to abandon what is not skillful and to develop what is skillful in its place. So those are the internal qualities that help provide a foundation for the practice of the path. You're truthful, heedful, you're observant, you have a sense of sangvega, and that you apply appropriate attention, looking at your actions not in terms of what you want to do or you feel like doing, but what you think would give good results in the long term. Now, for external qualities, the main one that the Buddha recommended is admirable friendship. In other words, looking for good people to associate with so that you can pick up lessons from them. He said there are four qualities that you want to look for in an admirable friend. One is generosity. The second is virtue. The third is conviction. And the fourth is discernment. Now, generosity here means not only being generous with monks, but being generous with people in general. And not only generous with things, but also generous with your time, generous with your knowledge, generous with your forgiveness. By associating with people like this, you learn important lessons about what it means to be generous. Similarly with virtue. When you hang out with people who are virtuous, you begin to get a sense of where your actions are unskillful and you want to bring them up to their level. Conviction, technically in the Buddhist teachings, means conviction in the Buddha's awakening. But what that means for you is that we live in a world where awakening is possible. And you are a person who has the ability to awaken. These things are the most important motivating factors. If you didn't believe that awakening was possible, or if you didn't believe that you could do it, it would be very difficult to make the effort that would be required. And finally, discernment, the ability to see things as they arise and pass away and understand why they're arising and why they're passing away. In other words, you look for cause and effect. It's not just watching things coming and going, but when things come, you want to know why. When they go away, you want to know why. When you can observe that, that's the discernment that's going to help you as you develop your skillfulness on the path. Now, an important part of having a relationship with admirable friends is that you have a strong sense of shame and honor. Now, shame here, in America at least, has a bad name, but essentially means the opposite of shamelessness. In other words, you want to look good in somebody's eyes, and you want to choose the right people to look good in their eyes. In other words, you try to choose wise people. You try to look at your own actions, and You might think, you know, if a John Lee were alive, or if a John Cha or a John Mun were alive, and they looked at my actions, what would they think? And if you think that, gosh, they would say, woof, then you say, well, maybe I should learn how to change my actions so that it actually would look good in their eyes. So these are some of the qualities that the Buddha said lie at the foundation before you can start your way on the path. They're the factors of right view, understanding karma, the distinction between what's skillful and unskillful, and particularly wanting to abandon what is unskillful and develop what is skillful. They're the internal qualities of truthfulness, heedfulness, your powers of observation, sangwega, and appropriate attention. And then internal external qualities, trying to find friends who are people who embody generosity, virtue, conviction, and discernment, so you can learn lessons from them, practical lessons from them, and make your own behavior more like theirs. And you have one to develop a sense of shame around these people so that you want to look good in their eyes. That's a part of a motivating factor that enables admirable friendship to turn that friend's qualities into your qualities. Okay, the path is composed of 8 factors. Right view, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Right view and right resolve both come in 2 levels. There's what's called mundane right view and noble right view. There's mundane right resolve and noble right resolve. Mundane right view, as I said earlier, is seeing things in terms of skillful and unskillful actions. Right resolve, noble right view is seeing things in terms of the Four Noble Truths. What is it that constitutes suffering? What is the cause of suffering? Is it possible to put an end to suffering? And the Buddha says yes. And then finally, the path to the end of suffering, which is the Noble Eightfold Path itself. Right resolve on the mundane level is basically making the resolve that you are going to renounce thoughts of sensuality, you're going to renounce ideas of ill will, and you're going to renounce thoughts of harmfulness. In other words, you try to renounce sensuality, you develop goodwill, and you develop compassion. Noble right resolve is basically getting the mind into right concentration, especially the first level of right concentration, where you are able to get rid of thoughts of sensuality, and your mind is, you're not doing anything harmful to anyone else at all. You're not willing anything ill with anyone. The mind is focused. That's noble right resolve. Right speech means avoiding 3 kinds of speech: lying, divisive speech, harsh speech, and idle chatter. But it also means trying to develop the positive equivalence of that. In other words, being truthful in what you say, trying to create harmony in the world, trying to speak in ways that are soothing to people, and speaking in ways that are actually useful for your listeners to hear. Similarly with right action. Right action is to avoid killing, avoid stealing, and to avoid illicit sex. In the positive way, this means that you help to look after the lives and well-being of other beings, that you try to help protect their property whenever is appropriate, and that you also help protect people from being victimized by sexual predators. Rightly livelihood is not very clearly defined in the text, but it basically means one not engaging any livelihood that would involve harm, any livelihood that would increase unskillful mental states either in yourself or in other people, or in engaging in a livelihood that is otherwise okay, but you do it in a dishonest way. You try to avoid that. Right effort means basically giving rise to the desire. And here it's important to note that there is a role for desire in the path. You give rise to the desire to abandon unskillful qualities that have already arisen in the mind, to prevent new unskillful qualities from arising, to give rise to skillful qualities that have not yet arisen, and to further develop those that have arisen. Right mindfulness is a very long, complicated definition, but its main purpose is to remember what is skillful, remember what is unskillful, and then be alert to seeing when unskillful things come up in the mind, and being ardent in getting rid of those unskillful things. Also being alert to the possibility when you could give rise to something skillful and being ardent in giving rise to that. You base this on four foundations or four frames of reference, the body in and of itself, feelings in and of themselves, mind states in and of themselves, and mental qualities in and of themselves. These are the basic factors that will then create a state of concentration in the mind. Right mindfulness then leads right into right concentration. With right concentration, you're focused on creating a sense of pleasure, which is feeling, filling the body, and then filling the body with that, both that sense of pleasure and with your awareness. So you've got body, feelings, mind, all together there in right concentration. Then you notice whatever qualities need to be developed in order to further the concentration and what other qualities need to be abandoned. So the framework of the right mindfulness then translates right into the framework for right concentration. Now it turns out that there are actually three levels for many of the factors. There's mundane, noble, and then what we call final. Mundane is for when you're just getting started in the path and tends to deal with people and worlds, which are the basic materials of what's called becoming. We'll talk about that in the next section. The noble level is the leading to the first three levels of awakening. The Buddha says there are four stages in awakening, and the noble path can take you up to the first three. And then the final or ultimate level is one that leads to the final stage of awakening, in which everything is abandoned, including the path. Up to that point, however, everything in the path has to be developed. That's the activity that we engage in the path, so as to put an end to suffering and stress and get the mind ultimately to a place where it can go beyond the path and then let go. Without the path, however, it cannot just let go and find awakening. It has to take the path to awakening. That puts you in a place where you can totally let go and then gain total release. The Buddha talks about two different ways in which the factors are related to one another. The first way is linear. In other words, the first factor leads to the second to the third to the fourth, and so on down. Right view leads to right resolve leads to right speech leads to right action, all the way down through right concentration. There's a second way, however, in which the factors are much more interrelated. Start with right view, right effort, and right mindfulness, and each of these then circle around every other factor. In other words, right view tells you, for example, what is right speech, what is wrong speech. Right effort tries to give rise to right speech and abandon wrong speech. And right mindfulness is what remembers the message, the lessons from right view. To remembers to give rise to right speech and abandon wrong speech. Notice here, right mindfulness is not just seeing things coming and going. It has a purpose to give rise to what's skillful and to abandon what is unskillful. In both of these patterns, right view comes first. This means that it must inform all the other factors. In other words, in order to know what's a right action or wrong action, or right effort or wrong action, you need to have right view. As we'll see, there are three levels to right view. I mentioned two already. We'll talk about third tomorrow night. But as the path develops, it means that your right view is going to develop as well. That means that right view has to learn from the practice of the other factors, so that the relationship is reciprocal. One side helps the other, and the other side helps they help another back and forth. So as we're going to be looking at the individual factors, we're going to focus on how they play this reciprocal role with right view. This is particularly true about what the factor that the Buddha said is the heart of the path, which is right concentration. As he said, all the other factors are there to help right concentration along so that it can become noble right concentration. As we see when we're talking about right view, suffering is caused by all the kinds of craving that lead to becoming. Concentration is a form of becoming, so we'll have to talk about exactly what becoming is. Becoming is basically taking on an identity in a world of experience. Now both the identity and that world come from a desire. For instance, if you have a desire for pizza, the world that is relevant to that particular desire is the world that either things in the world that help you get the pizza or the things that will stand in the way of the pizza. For example, you have the money to get the pizza, you have the car to drive down to the nearest pizza parlor, or you have a smartphone where you can order a pizza to come. This is one of the reasons why people are so attached to their smartphones. They become part of themselves. They become part of your identity. They're part of your range of skills for getting things like pizza. So that's the you as the provider. And then there's the you as the consumer, the part of you that's going to benefit from the pizza, mainly your taste buds and your stomach. So the world that's defined around the desire there is the world, as I said, that either helps you or gets in the way of your pizza. And then your sense of self is the sense of self either that can gain the pizza or has the ability to gain the pizza or is going to benefit from gaining it. Now, both the world and your sense of identity will change with each desire. If you find yourself suddenly getting into a political argument, okay, at that point, pizzas don't matter, the pizza parlor doesn't matter, maybe your smartphone doesn't matter either. What matters at that point is that you live in a world where you want to win the argument, and you identify with yourself as the person who can come up with the arguments and who will benefit by winning the argument. So we go from becoming, becoming, becoming as we go through the day, as our desires change. Now it turns out, as I said, that right concentration is also a state of becoming. This, all the factors starting with right effort, right mindfulness leading to right concentration, all become a state of becoming. Now in this case, the world is the world of your body as you feel it from within, the feelings that you have within the body, and your sense of self is the you as the meditator who can create a sense of well-being in the breath, can let that sense of well-being spread throughout the body. Now the advantage of using the state of becoming is because it is right here in front of you, it enables you to see clearly what are the stages by which becoming is created. How do you take on an identity? How you define your world around the becoming? And that way, because you learn how becoming is made, then you're also in a position to learn how to not make states of becoming. So this is the role of right concentration. It teaches right view about more detail about what it is to take on an identity in a particular world, and also how you can learn how to abandon that identity in that particular world. So that's the specific lesson, one of the specific lessons that right concentration gives to right view. In all cases, with all the factors, each factor, beginning with right resolve, gives specific insight into how cause and effect of fabrication acts in the mind as you try to abandon the wrong factors and develop the right ones. Remember, there are three fabrications, bodily, verbal, and mental. Bodily fabrication is the breath. Verbal fabrication is the way you talk to yourself. Mental fabrication is feelings and also labels, either an image in the mind or a word in the mind. If these things follow on ignorance, they create suffering. If they follow on knowledge, they actually become part of the path. So in this case, this kind of the fabrication of the path, even though it is simply a fabrication, it is not a lie, it is not an illusion, it's actually something helpful. And remember, what is the difference between ignorance and knowledge? Knowledge is basically understanding what exactly suffering is, how it's caused, how you can put an end to it. Even though these things are all fabricated, remember, pain they create is real. And the Buddha said, all Four Noble Truths are real. They are not illusory. So you learn from those truths, and then as you fabricate based on that, then your fabrications are in line with the truth and actually can help bring an end to suffering. In particular, they give you insight into what is worth doing and what is not worth doing. It's important to remember that the insight that we're going to be gaining as we follow the path is a value judgment. It's not just seeing things arise and passing away and just saying, okay, that's enough, I don't need that anymore. You begin to realize that you are part of the process that gives rise to these things. You've been creating these things. If they create stress, you realize it's not worth doing anymore. If they help lead to the end of the stress, that kind of action is worth doing. So the insight is basically insight into what is worth doing, what is not worth doing. And as that insight deepens and as it develops, it'll finally take you to a place that where there is no action at all. That place of freedom from action, the freedom from results, causes and results, that's where we're aiming. But to get there, we have to master the process of causes and results as we do it, fabricating the path, all eight factors of the path, as they learn from one another, based on right view.